Welcome, everyone. What a joy this is to see everyone this morning. And as is our tradition, I would like to offer a prayer, a blessing to bring us into presence as we begin our journey into wisdom. And these are from the words of John O'Donohue. May you awaken to the mystery of being here and enter the quiet immensity of your own presence. May you have joy and peace in the temple of your senses. May you receive great encouragement when new frontiers beckon. May you respond to the call of your gift and find the courage to follow its path. May the flame of anger free you from falsity. May warmth of heart keep your presence aflame and anxiety never linger about you. May your outer dignity mirror an inner dignity of soul. May you take time to celebrate the quiet miracles that seek no attention. And may you take time to console in the secret symmetry of your soul. May you experience each day as a sacred gift, woven around the heart of wonder. And it's my great pleasure today to introduce this remarkable and timely Word in Life series with our source book from Cynthia, The Wisdom Way of Knowing. We're at an inflection point in our human evolution, and we're called to participate in our divine role, which is so beautifully and simply stated by the words of William Blake. We are put on this earth to bear the beams of love. And I'd like to draw your attention to the subtitle of this seminal book, Reclaiming an Ancient Tradition to Awaken the Heart. And as Cynthia says, wisdom isn't knowing more, it is knowing with more of you, seeing from the eye of the heart. This offering was born out of a great need to tend the wounds of our world and to help us find a way forward as people of faith. There's a great sense of urgency caused by our unsettled times, and many of us feel adrift and confused on how we can make a difference in this seemingly broken world. And the Wisdom Way offers a precise roadmap of spiritual transformation, giving us a comprehensive vision of our human purpose and dignity. I invite you to envision how each of us can play our part in this cosmic transformation of our fragile planet as we learn how to become containers of God's love as it flows into the world. And it's our intention today to invite you into this heart perception from wholeness as we journey together for the next 10 weeks. And now I'm so honored to introduce a dear friend of mine and a beloved voice in our wisdom community. I met Heather Roos a number of years ago at Casa de Maria here in Santa Barbara with Cynthia Borgio, never envisioning the deep connection I would find with her as we continued our journey into wisdom teachings. She has become a gifted and beloved wisdom teacher in the tradition of Cynthia Borgio, offering her beautiful teachings in the form of retreats, daily contemplative and centering prayer groups, attention and movement exercises in the tradition of the Gurdjieff teachings, as well as leading sacred chants. And just this morning, we sat together in another Zoom call with our centering prayer and our attention exercises every day. Heather is there waiting for us as we join her with such a wonderful dedication to our wisdom tradition. Heather is a wonderful choice to lead us into an exploration of this reawakening of our deep roots of the wisdom tradition within Christianity. This path of spiritual transformation gives us a clear vision of our human purpose and also practices and how to get there. And Heather has devoted herself to offering the gift of these practices into an ever-widening community of wisdom seekers. Heather has a rich background that makes her the perfect fit for her offering of embodied wisdom work, as well as spiritual director. She studied the field of psychotherapy, organic intelligence, and somatic work. We are richly blessed to welcome Heather into our circle this morning. She lives in San Diego with her husband, and she is a postholder for our West Coast wisdom community. So we welcome Heather this morning. And now, it's our pleasure to continue our tradition of welcoming and blessing our speakers with Tom Heck's blessing song. So put yourself on gallery view and all of you raise your hands as we listen to and join in the blessing as we hear these words.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
And I give you Heather.
Wow, thank you, Marianne, and Tim and Judith, what an amazing space you've created here. And as we jump in today, I do want to just name that there's some unexpected construction in my area. And as is wisdom, we meet the conditions of our life exactly as they are. So I apologize for that and hope we can work around it. But here we are to begin this amazing book study with Cynthia Bourgeau. And as you can see, my copy is very well used. This is a book I've returned to over and over and over again throughout the years. And I think as we introduce what this wisdom way is, it's important to talk about what is wisdom. What does Cynthia mean when she's talking about wisdom? Because it's a word that has a huge range of meaning in both our common language and also spiritual language. It can be used sometimes from that generic sense of, gaining wisdom with age, to the Greek word Sophia, which is often wisdom personified as feminine and used in some of the books in the Old Testament. It can also be used to describe the gift of contemplation or unitive seeing. But what this little book is exploring is even more than that. And I'd like to begin us with a reading from the introduction here, from Cynthia, just to take in these words as we continue to find our way into this path. When I use the term wisdom, I'm designating a precise and comprehensive science of spiritual transformation that has existed since the headwaters of the great world religions and is, in fact, their common ground. This science includes both theory and practice. The theory part consists of a unified cosmology. In other words, a comprehensive vision of our human purpose and destiny. The practice involves a systematic training for growing into that purpose. How could an ancient cosmology have anything to say to our modern world? That's the astonishing part. The wisdom cosmology is bold, spacious, and remarkably contemporary. In fact, and this is what drew me to it in the first place, it contains some missing pieces that somehow fell out of our Western cultural worldview and are crucially needed as we grapple with the questions of our meaning and accountability in a fragile and overstressed world. There are pieces here that can break down the walls between science and religion, reconcile intellectual freedom and moral integrity, and provide an utterly compelling argument for our global ecological responsibility. Other pieces speak to a more personal longing for meaning and coherence and help fill in the picture of why the psychotherapeutic mindset of our times and the pursuit of individual wellness and fulfillment so persistently fail to satisfy. I think that speaks very much to where we are. And these practices, the practice part that she's referring to, is really at the base of all the great world traditions, with many core elements being resonant throughout them, things like surrender, detachment, compassion, forgiveness, whatever path you're on, you still have to journey to where your true heart lies, and all the traditions hold a piece of that original wisdom cosmology. The wisdom tradition really has its own clear vision of human purpose and the practical technology for getting there, which is something that is going to be evident all throughout these months together. And this exploration is just to show us how to use the teachings of wisdom to transform our own lives in the conditions exactly as they are. And we don't have to go away and live in a monastery. We can make our own lives our monastery. And if you happen to be somebody who searches for deeper meaning in your life, which I'm guessing you do, because that's why you're here, and perhaps have felt there were some missing pieces in the belief system you've grown up with, and whether you're part of a church or not, this path is probably for you. So Cynthia really brings together two big pieces, two sources or streams of spiritual heritage. She fuses these and they enhance and activate our capacity for a deeper way of knowing. So this wisdom path we're exploring these weeks is really going to be drawing on these. And the first is that ancient lineage of the Benedictine monasticism, with the template of ora et labora, prayer and work, and together and alone. And this provides an essential and orderly rhythm for deepening our formation. And I'm guessing that many of you already have pieces of that in your life. And it's this idea of balancing both conscious work as well as time of prayer, engaged both alone and collectively. And this enhances our capacity to, I believe Cynthia says, bend one's being around truths not usually accessible at our ordinary level of awareness, which we'll talk a little bit more about. And that second sacred path, known simply as the work, this was taught by the early 20th century mystic, philosopher, and spiritual teacher G. Iger Jief. And what he brought forth was really a method of mindfulness before there really was a mindfulness movement, for developing deeper awareness, conscious attention, and the embodiment of what he called three-centered knowing, which is almost synonymous at this point with what Cynthia means when she talks about the wisdom way of knowing. It's about presence. And in her book, she does talk about how one of the greatest losses in our Christian West has been the loss of our own wisdom heritage, that many people hearing about wisdom in this way we're going to be talking about it, imagine that it's not in our tradition, but in fact it is. And unaware, many people are unaware that the first title given to Jesus by his immediate band of followers was Mashal Meshalem, Master of Wisdom. So as we talk about this, we're really talking, exploring this wisdom tradition as it arises in the Christian tradition, knowing that it isn't exclusive to the Christian tradition. It's like water. It takes the shape of any container. It's a way of being present, a way you actually live, rather than more doctrines. So something that Cynthia refers to in the end of her introduction is a short course in wisdom. And I thought it might be helpful, as we're introducing this wisdom tradition, to go through something that she's taken and condensed from that and calls now a very short course in wisdom. So I'm going to share that now. And go through it with all of you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this very short course in wisdom, as Marianne has said, and as I've already touched on, wisdom is not so much a philosophy or a curriculum, but a way of knowing. It's not about knowing more, but knowing deeper, knowing with more of yourself involved. And this is really knowing deeper and deeper, carving and digging your being deeper and deeper so that it can receive more knowing. Spiritual truths, spiritual realities are not just something we understand with our head, but there's something that we can begin to experience with our whole being, which is this next one, that wisdom is three-centered knowing. It engages our mind, our emotions, and our body in a single act of perception, of seeing, of recognizing something to be true. And I'd like to stop here and unpack this one for a little bit, because it takes some understanding of what she means by presence in these centers. So first, we're talking about the mind, which can be viewed as, or talked about as, the intellectual center. And obviously this plays a major role in how we understand the nature of reality and has a lot of different functions. This is our thinking, reasoning, rationality, associations. This is the part of us that understands concepts and problem solving and memory and recall. We have a whole storehouse for collecting, defining, and sorting and retrieving information. This is at its worst, this center, when we're not fully present in it, can look a lot like automatic representations and classifications of what we take in into categories and labels. When it's not functioning fully, it can be just a continual associations and comparisons. Oh, that's like this, not really allowing ourselves to take in things fresh. At its worst, this can be where dualism or division of things into poles rather than polarity, always looking for the opposites and taking extremes. This is where we can find that in unceasing flow of everything, all those ways of thinking that make up what you may have heard Cynthia talk about as the formatory apparatus. This is when we get into our just habitual ways of thinking about the world and close down to anything new or any new understandings. But at its best, our intellectual center has the capacity for creative thought, construction, discovery, invention, seeing connections, bringing order and unity to diversity. There's education and a sense of morality influencing choice. We have some agency over our thoughts. Our attention becomes voluntary. So we need our minds. It's very, very helpful. But in terms of understanding spiritual realities, it often is an unfit tool for the job. So this emotional center that we also have, where our emotions come in and our ability to connect with others, our noble and altruistic emotions, our philanthropic and charitable impulses, a lot of this comes from our emotional center. At its worst, it can become pretty habitual. Our likes and dislikes are here, our attractions and aversions that control our actions. This is where we can have some pretty primitive or base emotions that are petty or spiteful or cruel. This part, when it's at its worst, can be quick to judge other people on first impressions that aren't always accurate and can be overly concerned with conventional religious and moral values and whether others are living up to those, what we think they should be. Concerned with what other people think of us and whether they notice us, admire us, or approve of us, respect us, whether they're treating us fairly or respectfully enough. And this part, at its worst, is the part that wants to be understood more than to understand. But at its best, it's a powerful part of our discernment. It can be light and have a sense of humor. There's an aesthetic appreciation, beauty, and artistic creation. And it's a gateway to our higher capacity to really see ourselves objectively and with conscience. And it's very crucial to our self-development. It's capable at its best of considering others and wanting to understand rather than just be understood. Thinking of others for their sake, seeing them and their circumstances from the outside as they are, rather than from the inside of ourselves and from the point of view of our wants and how we imagine things to be. And this is the part of us that guides our spiritual search. It's attracted to greater possibilities like the fruits of the spirit. It draws us to be more sensitive to the subtle realities of higher consciousness and to seek their sources. And then finally, the body, also called the movement center. This includes gestures and postures and sensations. It includes automatic functions like our breath and our circulatory system, our immune system, but it also includes our ability to walk and float and ride a bike and all these different ways that we can move in the world, dancing and so on. And at its worst, this center can be ruled by the pursuit of pleasant sensations and the avoidance of unpleasant sensations. It can become habitual, limiting our ability to learn new movements. It can be overcome by frenzied competition. It can be excessively tense, or we have poor posture that we notice ourselves losing our energy in. But at its best, it can protect us from danger and disease. It adapts to the rhythms and the processes of the external world, the seasons. It has that very instinctive love and nurturing. It can sense pulse and rhythm and deep pleasure in communal movement, ceremonial and festive dances, things like that. And it contains also a higher order of intuitions and grasping sacred gestures that bypass the mind. So it has a very astute capacity to understand spiritual truths that the mind has a hard time with. And it can receive information through gestures. So that's what we mean by these three centers. Cynthia says that wisdom is also state dependent. It can only be conveyed in a state of presence, our being. And as Maurice Nichols says, as your being increases, your receptivity to higher meaning increases. As your being decreases, the old meanings return. And I think we all have a sense of what that means. I think we all know and have experienced that we can really understand things when our three centers are open and working together. There's a receptivity to understanding and seeing things in a way that we can't in our normal operating system. So wisdom is also not the same thing as Gnosticism. It's not about secret information or anything like that. And it's not even necessarily a mystical experience, although it may include that. But the only thing it alters is our mode of being present in the world. How we see that, this progression in wisdom, it's typically incremental. It's always substantiated by something in imparting of this compassion, humility, and groundedness, again, the fruits of the Spirit. So it's not about just knowing something. It's also about allowing that knowing to come through in our lives and show up. They will know us by our fruit, as Jesus says, right? So wisdom, as I mentioned earlier, it underlies all the great religious traditions, and it's not exclusively confined to any of them. And this is why wisdom at its closest point of contact is at the base of each of the spiritual traditions, even if they strongly disagree in many, many places across the sacred traditions. There's a lot of convergence here at the wisdom part. And this is often distinguished by the genres that are more parables, koans, situational teachings, rather than just simply answering a question, either giving a question back or putting people in a situation where they're learning for themselves, being able to recognize for themselves, access that wisdom that is inside. And Jesus was clearly recognizable as a wisdom teacher, and he was primarily concerned with the transformation of our consciousness, not just behaving in a certain way, but cleansing our insides in such a way that we are transformed. And this has a bit of a connection with putting our mind in our heart. So in this tradition, the heart is not necessarily equated to the emotional center that we were talking about. And in fact, Cynthia says, I'll read this from her book. It's actually on page 33, if you happen to have it in front of you. The heart in the ancient sacred traditions has a very specific and perhaps surprising meaning. It's not the seat of our personal affective life, or even ultimately of our personal identity, but an organ for the perception of divine purpose and beauty. It is our antenna, so to speak, given to us to orient us toward the divine radiance and to synchronize our being with its more subtle movements. The heart is not for personal expression, but for divine perception. The heart is not for personal expression, but for divine perception. So this heart we're talking about comes online when our three centers are aware and awake, and not in some of those places that I mentioned that can become more mechanical at their worst. But it's about this different perception, classically referred to as putting the mind in the heart. It's again the organ of spiritual perception. And for those of us who are on this wisdom path, we open ourselves, we give ourselves to that which supports the heart moving more and more firmly into the seat of spiritual perception, and is more and more liberated from our personal dramas and attachments, all that stuff that we get caught up with here on the horizontal level, it's often called, here in the world. And we learn how to entrain more with the cosmic divine heart, that vertical dimension that is often referred to, or the kingdom of heaven, or even the imaginal realm, you may have heard it called. And so we're opening to that deeper selfhood that we access in the heart. And this involves the practices that many of you are probably already deeply seeped in: silence, surrender, attention, disidentification with ourselves here on this axis alone, and then radiantly transformed souls can become embodiments of this wisdom. And only in this way can this authentic wisdom tradition be transmitted to the whole. But as Teilhard de Chardin says, to understand the world, knowledge is not enough. You must see it, touch it, live in its presence. So this is what we mean when we're talking about this wisdom way of knowing. And I'd like to bring us into a brief practice now to give us a sense of these centers and into this heart that we're speaking of. I invite you, if it's comfortable, to just gently close your eyes and bring some awareness into your heart area. Maybe even putting a hand there over your heart and beginning to notice the rise and fall of your chest. And I invite you first into an image, using your mind, using your intellectual center, just to have an image of your heart. And if that is in any way overwhelming, because this can be very intimate, what we're about to do, just notice and picture your heart area. So noticing the image of your heart, this comes in through your intellectual center. See if you can begin now to access any feeling that might be present or emotion. Often when we bring our attention here, we can notice feeling connected either to ourselves or to everyone who's here or to God, or we can feel a longing for God, for the divine mystery. Sometimes we might even feel some gratitude for this heart beating in our chest. Sometimes when we've felt betrayed by our heart, there may be some grief or pain. That's okay too. The heart, as an organ of spiritual perception, can make space for everything, can cling to nothing and reject nothing. Just seeing if there's a way you can connect with a feeling. Feeling, especially to that part of you that is of the same substance of God, your deepest you, as Catherine of Genoa says, my deepest me is God, or a wish to connect with that feeling. That you are, your heart is a fractal of the divine heart. This would be the work of the emotional center, the feeling center. And if you can, moving now beyond the image of your heart and the intellectual center, moving now beyond even a feeling or an emotion, see if you can begin to sense in this area So you might be able to sense your heart beating. It's often a little more challenging because it's quite in the center of your torso. But sometimes you can begin to sense your heart beating, especially if you're making contact there. Sensing, or maybe you can just sense around your heart area. Maybe there's some warmth. Maybe there's some buzzing. Often when we bring our gentle attention inside in sensation, there can be a little buzzing or tingling or pulsing. And if it's too uncomfortable, I invite you just to come back to one of the others or just simply open your eyes and connect with everyone here on gallery view. Otherwise, see if you can bring that attention inside a little bit further, sensing. And then from that place, opening up so that you have the sensation right alongside, co-present with any feeling that may be there and any thought about your heart being. A hole within the whole of God's heart, connecting all our hearts. And in fact, as you're aware there, we talk about bringing the mind down into the heart. We're talking about allowing the mind to be aware in the heart. We know now that the heart, the frequency of the heart goes out actually about 3 feet in all directions. So just notice right now that your heart is extending even beyond your skin, and that in a way you are in your own heart, that portal, that doorway to God's own heart, this organ of spiritual seeing. And I invite you just to notice any impressions, maybe a word or a phrase that you're aware of there. Maybe it's something you could even share in the small groups a little bit later, something you may want to return to. And without losing complete connection to that, I invite you to open your eyes once again, bring your attention back to the screen, to one another. So in summary, as we explore and dive into this wisdom way of knowing, which Cynthia will unpack in this book, it's just important to remember that it emphasizes a holistic approach, utilizing all of our centers, sometimes referred to as three-brained intelligence. These are centers of intelligence that help us to take in more of the divine, that help us to see from that place, different from our ordinary awareness, which is generally, you know, our egoic thinking and perceiving ourself in time, our personality, that outer layer, which again, this part is not a negative part. This self that lives here is not to be shunned or gotten rid of, but rather to be noticed, tracked with the understanding that we're not only this, that there's something more that lives in us and through us that is in this world, but not of this world. So this wisdom way is about our three centers working in harmony so that our mind can be clear and settled, that we can have actual helpful thinking and that our emotional center is free from attaching to all of our emotional agendas, sometimes called the passions by the desert mothers and fathers, and the moving center, grounded, steady, and at ease. Then our heart, as that organ of spiritual perception, is able to come online, that can perceive from wholeness, from unity. And this is in service of awakening, awakening, as Cynthia has said, which is awakening and being able to have the capacity to perceive and act in accordance with the imaginal realm or the kingdom of heaven. And when we're awake, that requires all of our centers. So this notion of being asleep, if you will, is really an indication of finding ourselves in only one of those centers. So we have to begin to work with the most underutilized center faculty and bring it into balance so that we can inhabit all three. And this is about paying attention in wider ways. So the centers are kind of like a tripod that holds the camera of your being, of your presence, your quality of aliveness. And generally, this is obviously an overgeneralization, but 90% of Americans live in their thoughts, even if you don't think of yourself as a head person or an intellectual person. As we grow up, it's like our awareness starts to move up and up and up, and we start living from higher and higher places in ourselves. But our minds are okay, and we don't necessarily have to deprogram them, but we are invited to bring the others up and in a way turn up the volume of these other centers, keeping our attention in ourselves more. And when we're alive and balanced in all three centers, something else arises that we can open to, that presence. And it's not like an attained state of enlightenment that we all of a sudden get there and then never go back. It's more like a pendulum where we wake up and we go back to sleep. It's not a steady state. That's okay. It's not about getting there or arriving. It's not a place you get to, but away you go. And it's about this constant process of falling asleep and waking up and remembering that something calls us back. So the last thing I'll read before we move into this breakout groups is on page 36. She says, when a person is poised in all three centers, balanced and alertly there, a shift happens in consciousness. Rather than being trapped in our usual mind with its well-formed rut tracks of issues and agendas and ways of thinking, we seem to come from a deeper, steadier, and quieter place. We are present, in the words of wisdom tradition, fully occupying the now in which we find ourselves. And as I would add, more able to see what is needed in any given situation. So that's a little bit about this wisdom way. As you get ready to dive into the book, and we have a couple of questions that I'll leave you with. And that is, what inner aim or intention, what draws you to be here in this space, exploring this series on the wisdom way of knowing? And how can you begin to weave the wisdom way of knowing we've been talking about, especially this three-centered awareness, more consistently in your day-to-day life, both personally and communally, over these next few months?
Wonderful. Thanks, Heather.